Busy city life makes it hard to think about and work at integrating our faith with our lives. Welcome to the Cathedral Podcast, produced and hosted by Jenny Ho Huan. Each episode, we want to help you relate core Christian truths to your daily life. Whether it's science, philosophy, cultural trends, or life stories, we bring you authentic and unrehearsed conversations to spark insight and strengthen your faith and your life.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's podcast episode. We are going to be speaking about digital literacy. You know, there's been a mass migration of humanity in the last few decades, and we have been moving from natural physical spaces into the digital space. That's a very huge move with great consequences for every single one of us. And to discuss this subject with me is Ms. Carol Loy. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Very glad to have you here. Can't think of anyone better. Carol, you are currently International Director of Generations of Virtue, an organization that seeks to transform culture one family at a time. And naturally, because of this mass migration, the culture we need to talk about is the digital space. The digital space is a real space with an entire culture there. And therefore, literacy, to know how to navigate that culture is important. So let's begin with what is digital literacy, and why is it particularly important for us as Christians?
Okay, let me start by perhaps, as you said just now, that it is really so much a part of culture as we migrate to online. Whether we are young or old, we are all using the internet in different ways. Children as young as preschoolers and even as old as 70s, 80s, or even 90s, they are on the internet a lot. And I think what is important about understanding digital literacy and stepping a little bit back about actually how does this impact culture and how culture impacts us, I thought that's where I'll start the conversation with. By understanding that culture is something that is made up by people, that it's not just something that impacts us, but actually we can do things to impact the culture around us. It could be our family culture, it could be our ministry culture, it could be our church culture, or a larger societal culture. I think when we understand that there is actually this a kind of dance, knowing that culture impacts us, but actually we can do something to impact culture, then we can understand that, oh, why did God give us devices? Why did God plant us in this cultural moment where we are swamped with information that we get from various forms of media? When we can understand how this whole environment works, I think we can figure out in a better way how we as Christians are supposed to use technology and media in a way that can represent Christ well, both online and offline.
Thank you, Carol. That was an excellent introduction. You mentioned the words cultural moment. I think that's a very fine way to describe where we are at. At any one point, we are in some kind of cultural moment. And maybe, you know, sometimes we wish things could go back to the way they are, but this is where God has placed us. This is what God has called us to deal with, to face, to confront, to build, whatever it might be. But I was wondering whether you can unpack for us a bit more about what this cultural moment is like. And why it's so important and what we need to do to grapple with it.
We are in this cultural moment where we are flooded with information because information is just so easily accessible in different ways. On the internet, it could be in movies, on Netflix. And I think all this information carries with them different worldviews, different values that might be different from, say, a young person who has grown up in a Christian home. And as they grow older and be more exposed to different values and different forms of media, it actually nudges all of us. It's not just the young people. It nudges all of us into a certain way of thinking, into a certain way of seeing ourselves and the world. And so if I could perhaps draw us to the more deeper into the topic of worldview, because we understand how we can apply the Christian lens into all that we do, into how we see the world, then we can better understand what are we supposed to do with the devices that God has given us. What are we supposed to do with the various social media accounts that we have? Surely there is a reason why God has given this to us as a resource. And if we can see that as a resource to be used as an ambassador for Christ, then perhaps we would take a different approach to how we use it. So going back to the worldview question, that's important because that helps us to frame the world when we can get anchored into the Christian worldview or our faith. It applies to how we see everything around us. And so what the five questions are questions that actually anyone asks. It's not just us Christians, but it's anyone in any faith of any age. At some point in our lives, we ask these questions. And I can attest to that because I used to be a backslider. For over 20 years, since I was a teenager, I dropped out of church. I was asking all these questions and trying to figure out, you know, I can still be a moral person without being a Christian. You know, I can still be a good person. Why do I ever have to have a God, you know? But about 15 years ago, when I was pregnant with my younger one, I started to ask these questions again, this time with the lens as a mother. Mother of a young 3-year-old. My older one was 3 and I was pregnant, almost about to give birth, and I was figuring all these things out. Oh, it's getting harder to be a mother. How should I? And started to, like, if my child asked me these questions, what am I going to say? So what are some of these questions? So these five questions are in the area of origin. Where do we come from? Right? If we can figure out that, you know, the world is created, it didn't just come from nothing. When we know that there's a creator, that God has created us for something, and then it frames, okay, then there is a design for something. There is a design for me as a woman. God created me as a woman. God created me to be a mother. Surely there is something that I'm supposed to do because my creator made me for a purpose. Okay. The second question is about identity. Questions relating to who am I? What am I? And again, going back to that first question, if I know that I'm created, then I know that my identity is actually given by my creator. My identity is a child of God. The third question is about meaning, right? What am I on earth for? What am I here for? Again, if we can answer that two questions, right? If I know that I'm created, I didn't just come out of nowhere for no purpose, then I'm here for a purpose. What is that purpose? And if I know that I'm here created by God for a purpose, then I will know that, okay, there's a certain way that I should view the world. There's a certain way that I should be using the resources that I'm given, be it money, be it my devices, be it my relationships. The fourth question is about morality. Difference, how should I live my life? What is right and wrong? Is there ever a benchmark? I think I have two teenagers, and sometimes the discussion on what is right and wrong about morality, those conversations get more and more exciting as they grow older.
They will
talk about, you know, is it really a social construct? Is it such thing? Is there such thing as truth? Or is it like, is your truth? If you believe that that's true, that's your truth. But I believe what I'm doing, that's my truth. Is it really what this is? Is that how we should be living our life? And the fifth question is really about destiny. What happens when I die? Right? What is there ever life after death? When I can figure these five questions out together with my children, let's say it's in my family context, right? Then we know that, oh, actually I'm created. God has given me an identity. I'm supposed to be his child. And actually in 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 18 to 19, right? If I could read that verse for us. Now all things are of God, who has reconciled us to himself through Jesus Christ and has given us the ministry of reconciliation. That is, God was in Christ, reconciling the world to himself, not imputing their trespasses to them, and has committed to us the word of reconciliation. So what are we here for? What's the meaning of life? We are given the ministry of reconciliation. We are reconciled with God so that we can reconcile the people around us, the things around us, back to what God has created them to be. Wow, if we look at the cultural moment, and step back and look at, okay, actually, God has a bigger story. And what is God's grand story? God created the world and he said everything was good. But because of the fall, sin entered to the picture, and then there were things that are not so good, you know, and it's sinful, it hurts God, but God sent Jesus to die on the cross to reconcile us back to him, right? And then towards the end of the story, the end game is really that we are going back to him, right? And so we are in this moment, in terms of cultural moment, that we are given the ministry of reconciliation. We are supposed to reconcile things back to God. But I think the challenge for many of us, myself included, depending on the context that I'm in, is do we have the courage to engage culture to reconcile it back to God? Because sometimes the people that we want to reach out to might say, oh, whatever you say, it hurts my feeling. You are not taking care of what I think and feel. You know, why are you imposing your values on me? And so sometimes how do we articulate that in a way that says, you know, I still like love you as a person, just as how God loves me. I am imperfect, but I am on my way to be more and more Christ-like. And because I love you, be it my child or my friend or someone from church, you know, but because I love you as God loves us, there are some things that I need to balance with truth. And sometimes the truth may not be what you want to hear, but this is what I believe that is best for you because I love you. So it's that kind of engagement that I think in this cultural context that we are in, sometimes it's hard. And I work with young people quite a bit, sometimes I get a lot of questions about, oh, how should I be talking to my friend, you know, who is different from me, and without them telling me that, oh, because you are a Christian and therefore you think that, don't impose your Christian views on me, whether is it physically, relationally, or whether it's online. And I think online engagement is even more difficult.
So thank you for saying that. So there's this idea that actually all of us carry some kind of worldview, some kind of life philosophy with us. So in our life, as we engage on the online space, which is a big space, which is really, for some, the younger generation is the predominant space they live in. They have certain tools or not tools, certain values or not values, or certain philosophy where they are using to engage that. And like you mentioned, you know, when a young person say, you know, it's so hard to say that to my friend, there is a philosophy behind what they're saying. And the philosophy might be, you know, we should maintain harmony at all costs. We should value everybody equally. And those philosophies are not completely wrong, but they may not be adequate. And your point about having a Christian worldview and developing that worldview, therefore, is very important. So I'm hearing you say that that's very important first piece to be done, which is as we are growing up as young people, to be somehow equipped with this Christian worldview so that we understand what's the philosophy we have when we enter into any space, any conversation, any relationship. But I think the second piece, which I want you to comment more about, is also before we engage others, you know, as we come online, what are some things we need to be mindful of that's actually happening online? Because I looked up digital literacy in the educational space. It talks about, you know, how literacy is about the ability to read and write. But once you go into the digital space, it's not just about reading and writing. It's a lot more. And basically, the standard definitions I found speaks about being able to know how to consume, how to create, and how to communicate. These three C's. Okay, consume, create, communicate. But I'm thinking as Christians, because we live in a fallen world, there should be a fourth C as well. And that fourth C is how to critique what we're coming up against. So I'm just wondering whether you can share more about that with us.
That's very good. Critique, really, how do we critique? It can only be done in a way that is with gentleness and respect when we know, when we are convicted in our own faith. Because with culture and with all the things that we are consuming, sometimes we might see something that we read and we can't really tell whether is it really true or is it not true. Is it half truth? Is it 75% true? Yeah. And to be able to apply that lens, we need to have some principles. And if I could share 5 key media literacy principles. I think we are going into media literacy because I'm a fellow of the Center for Media Literacy based in the US, and this is what I cover in my sessions when I talk to young people or to families or educators. There are, you know, in our cultural moment, we are not just media consumers.
Yeah.
We are also media producers. Every time we take a picture, even if it's a food picture, right? Actually, at the back of our mind, we have a motif. What is it? So some of these principles that I am going to share, it relates to both us being a media consumer and a media producer. And that's the cultural moment that we are at. We are not just always consuming. We are able to also do something with the environment around us by sharing, you know, our testimonies, sharing our stories, sharing our good learning. It could be a book review or, you know, something that jumped out at you and things like that. So we are media producers. We don't have to wait.
And I think food pictures also shape culture.
Yeah.
Yeah. it elevates the importance of food, maybe a bit too much, but okay. Yeah, I like to hear those five principles. Yes. Yes.
So here we go. So the first one, it's about authorship. Okay. All messages are constructed. Mm. Okay. So we remember as a media consumer, when I read something, I want to ask myself, who wrote this message? You know, who wrote this blog post? If I'm not sure, sometimes if it's written by a news outlet, I would go to the about and to find out what that is. Because when we can understand who wrote it, even if it's a research publication, we will also want to find out, for example, who funded the research, things like that. So when this becomes a habit of mine, we will understand that, oh, actually, somebody has put this message out and we want to understand the background and the purpose. Okay, and so the second one is that media messages are constructed using a creative language with its own rules. So, for example, we can recognize a poem is a poem. It has got certain structure. We can recognize a meme as a meme. We know what's a meme, right? Like a picture with a very succinct point that usually generates laughter, but it makes a point.
Mm.
And not everybody can compose a meme. I don't think I can compose a meme. Even though my daughters tell me that I'm meme generators, but I think it takes a certain skill, but it comes very intuitive to young people. And sometimes my daughters can catch memes that I don't understand. It takes me like a long while to understand. is that funny? So what this principle is that there are certain messages that can be done in a more effective way in a particular way. There are certain things that needs to be long form, for example, like Twitter, it has to be shorter, more succinct. If it's on Instagram, for example, it's best to accompany with a picture, right? Or if it's Facebook, it can afford to be longer. If it's a blog post, Facebook notes, it can be longer with more details in it. Okay, so that's the second point. So if I am a media producer, for example, I have a message that I want to send out, then I would need to think about who is my target audience. If I'm trying to reach out to young people, for example, then I need to pick the right tool. So, for example, if I want to reach young people, I would go to Instagram, or even now they're moving on to TikTok. Then I need to understand how TikTok works and produce that message in a way that they can understand. Okay. Because every one of these has its own. Yeah.
But I'm just going to interrupt you here because the back of my head, I'm just thinking, you know, I also have two teenage kids. Actually, one is already an adult. And sometimes the pushback I get from them is, "Yeah, mom, why must be so hardworking? Just go and enjoy, lah." You know, it's like, must everything be turned into a mission, you know? So what would you say in response to that? We're still on point number two, right? About the forms and the message. Yeah.
Yeah. So I feel that, so I have this conversation with my teens too, but I think we are called to different mission fields. Like my husband, his mission field, he really has a heart for overseas missions, right? But my mission field, as we discussed, my mission field is actually in Singapore and in the home, first in my own home, and then reach others to impact their own homes. And one of the ways, because my mission field is with families and the key stakeholders are parents, how do I reach very busy parents? That's where I use technology to help build the relationship, help to share information, help to offer support. And so, for example, many a times I would have parents who text late at night, so I sleep very late, actually not very healthy. Because at the end of the day is when they finally have some me time. You know, after settling the family, after they have taken a shower, finally got some time. And then they will start to text about their concerns. And some people will reach out to me. And I find that is, to me, perhaps that's where God placed me. to use technology to serve in that way. So different people, we are all different parts of the same body, right? God would have given us different gifts and talents to engage in different mission fields. Not everybody needs to go overseas. Some people would have to anchor the home or anchor our nation.
Absolutely. Yep.
Perhaps
yep.
some yep. of us are called to do that. Yeah. Mm. So online okay. space become my way of reaching out. And I have learned over time that I should be intentional with every post, because if I treat this as a mission, as a resource that God has given me, and it's something that I should be a good steward of, then I should be intentional with not just using the tool, but every post. I would then apply these questions in my head. It becomes a habit in my mind. Am I intentional? Am I reflecting God well in all that I say and do?
Yeah, and actually with young people, it's understandable. It's a journey of maturing to ownership, to stewardship. It's a journey that they have to go through. So, you know, if you're a parent or a youth pastor, a leader listening to this, and your young people are saying, why are you being so serious? Just accept that they will say that, because it's a part of their growing up journey. And I think later, Carol, maybe you can share with us a little bit about your own journey with your kids. But let's get back to the 5 points. Yeah.
Okay, so to recap, the first one is to remember that all media messages are constructed. Constructed means there is a reason. I have a key message at the back of my mind. I find ways to build it with image, with words. It could be a video for the underlying message. The second one was there is a creative language for media messages. The third one is about audience, for us to appreciate that different people experience the same media message differently. So when we put out something, for example, we need to remember that just because something is funny to you doesn't mean that it's funny to other people. especially in the online space, people of different cultures might understand a picture differently or a word differently. And so we want to be mindful of that, especially when we want to represent Christ well. The fourth one is to know that media always have embedded values and points of view, right? When we consume something, for example, even though it doesn't say religion or whatever, but sometimes itself, it has got a worldview that is in it. So, for example, if I watch a movie with the girls, and then we see the female and the male lead, you know, start to kiss and then they start to go to the bedroom. It itself has a worldview, right? The view of the world is that it's okay. You know, if they're not married, it's okay to have sex. And so sometimes I would use that opportunity to, you know, to debrief with the girls. You know, what do you think? Do you think that is the right thing to do? And so to kind of like let them appreciate that even in the simple things that they are consuming through their eyes, through a movie or Netflix or whatever, a short video even, right, that there are embedded values in whatever form of media. And the last one is really that media messages are often organized to gain profit or power or even gain mind share. Okay, so when we have these five kind of like principles and we build it into our minds and becomes a habit of mind, then we can actually become very intentional. Whatever that we put out, we would automatically ask ourselves, not just whether is it kind, necessary and true, but more intentionally about, okay, what am I trying to say with this post? So sometimes, for example, I would share my parenting struggles or reflection. I have this habit, right? At the end of the day, when I do my quiet time, I would like reflect on my day. And sometimes God would prompt me to share a short reflection. Okay? And when I share a reflection, and I would be intentional, I will ask myself, am I just ranting or am I trying to say something? And what would be that something be? Is it something that is meant to encourage people? Does it bring a message? What is that message supposed to be? And what is the call for action? And so I become very intentional in all that I post, all that I share. And then that itself actually helps me to, in my opinion, to be a good ambassador for Christ. And people know that, okay, whatever things that Carol shares, you know, is reliable. I think that's a very precious brand that we want to have, you know, in the age where there are so many fake news, you know, misinformation, disinformation. When there are more and more of us representing Christ that can stand for the truth, that have got good discernment skills, I think that itself, you know, is a very precious in this day and age, in this cultural moment, that we stand for not just the truth of God, but we are able to discern what is real and what is not real, what is fake news and what is, and point them and give a reasonable response.
Yeah. Thank you so much for sharing that. Because I think as Christians, we believe, first, like you shared earlier from that precious scripture passage, that we have been given the ministry of reconciliation, which is to reconcile everything back to the Lordship of Christ, to the reign of God. But also to just understand that because media is a real space and the medium is sometimes part of the message. And especially right now with the capacities that we have online, there's a lot of personalization that's possible. And when you go out there, you are presenting yourself. It's like if you the moment you go online, you're walking into a room. You may be walking into a chat room. You may be walking into a newsroom. You may be walking, but you're walking into a room. And who are you when you're in that room? Who do you represent? Is it just yourself? Is it Christ? Is it your family? And the language you choose to use, what you choose to say, what you choose to bring into that space can influence the space that you happen to be in at that moment. Yeah, so that in a way is also the very precise pinpoint cultural moment that we are in whenever we log on and recognize that not only are we just consuming, and consuming also shapes us, like you say, you know, if over time we watch some things and it can, for example, desensitize us to violence, it can desensitize us to lose mores and all that. At the same time, we are also producing. We will respond in our comments. We will respond by creating stuff to put online and all that. So it's a really a very a real, actual space online. And honestly, for myself, I was just thinking this morning that, and telling my daughter over lunch just now, that email only just started about 30 years ago. And I first came across it when I already became a pastor in the mid-1990s, you know. As a popular form, because email started in 1971 in MTI, but for us as the masses, only in the 1990s. And my daughter was like, "What you mean it was never all around? Always?" It's like that. She was saying, "I always thought that cars were around. How was life like? You know, without all these things?" And we had a really good laugh about how society has just shifted, and everything we just assume is as it is. It's not necessarily the case. Okay, I diverge a little bit, but...
No, because you remind me when I first started work, we used to have a typist pool in office.
Oh, yes. That's the pool I've never found in.
Typist pool.
Guys. They actually try. They ask me to type, see how many words, and then they say, okay, yeah, I think we just go.
I had to go and beg people, can you please, this is urgent, can you please type this for me?
Those are the days. Okay, you guys listening in, this is new to you. Go Google typist pool and see whether you can find an image. That will be quite fun. But yeah, so back to the whole idea of consumption and production. But we also want to talk a little bit about the dangers on the online space. I think, of course, as Christians, sometimes we talk a little bit too much about it. And then we also get ourselves into this conspiracy theory thing and all that. But nonetheless, just now you mentioned, besides the fact that values are always embedded, because human beings are creatures of value, but there is also the profit and power motive. So I thought maybe you could just share a little bit more about that with us. You know, it's come to light that there are a lot of industries that profit a lot online, like the porn industry and the trafficking industry and so on and so forth. Maybe just a few comments on that, just for the awareness of our listeners.
I think, you know, none of us pay to use Instagram or Facebook, but we know that they are making a lot of money. How do they get their money from, right? A lot of us know that they get the money from ads, but how specifically, how does it really work? What does the business model look like? So even though we don't pay, we pay through our the way that we interact on those platforms. When we like a post, when we comment, when we share, we are actually feeding the algorithm, right? So that they can then have a better understanding of us, and they use that information then to customize ads, and that's how they generate the money. And so in terms of safety-wise, if the concern is about safety, to me, those are like basic things. You want to make sure that, you know, you have two-factor authentication on your various social media platforms. We want to know that it's not as straightforward as it seems, even though it's a free kind of thing that we use every day with all our friends, but there is a business model behind this. And when we are more aware of that, then we can, I think, take mastery over it, keeping ourselves safe, at the same time, use it in a way that can serve our purpose. So if we are intentional about using this and you know that there's an algorithm that is on those platforms, then it becomes, it's my interest to understand how that algorithm works, so that whatever that I put out can be seen by my friends. Because actually, just because we put something doesn't mean that our friends can see it.
That's true.
Because there's an algorithm. So so many people think that, wow, just because I put something on the website, everybody will see it. Oh, that's not true. You know, when we scroll our news feeds, not every friend's feeds we are seeing. We kind of like, they will push information to us that they think that is of value to us. Yeah. So if we always comment on, you know, wow, you cook so well, if I like my friend's post, right, to support her, then you, I will find that my feed always have got food. Or the ads that come out might also be
food
related.
Yeah.
That's how it says that, you know, this is how I customize in to make your, you know, your experience here to be as pleasant as possible because I'm giving something of value to you.
This is
but
where
that's,
the whole,
that's a position.
Yeah, but this is where the whole danger is as well, even for us as Christians, right? This concept of an echo chamber, that after a while you'll be hearing the same things that just continue to reinforce your current knowledge and your current position. Now, in view of the fact that we talk about engaging online as being good stewards of the resources, but the online space is designed to actually take that power away from us. So this is a tussle, you know, I feel. And I don't have an easy answer to that because I'm on the online space and I know that, you know, I think the only way I can do this is if I'm very intentional to look regularly as a discipline for things outside what I would regularly read or understand if I really want to have a fuller picture of things. But that, I think, could be difficult for younger people who may not know where to look. That could be difficult for people who struggle with technology, for example. So I think this is something also to be aware of, that when you go on the online space, you are going there to be influenced.
That is definitely, we want to be very aware that when we go there, we will be lightly influenced. And therefore, all the more we need to be anchored. So for me, anchoring our conviction, anchoring our values is very important. Mm-hmm. And so when I speak to families, for example, I would say, before you give your child access to internet or of freer use or more independence, we really need to anchor them on their faith, on their conviction, on their worldview, how they see the world. So that when they get on and be more exposed to different things, right? Because technology actually nudges us. It doesn't change us immediately. It doesn't transform us. But it nudges us in a different direction. So, for example, if I give a concrete example, what is the definition of success? Right? If you keep seeing pictures like, wow, you know, guys must be very buff. Wow, all the training videos, right? Then you think that maybe to be masculine means I must have a big body. Or if it's girls, right, if they keep seeing pictures of their stars, you know, with certain physical features, they might think that, okay, to be pretty, to be accepted, we have to be like that, pose in a certain way, dress in a certain way. We have to be mindful that we don't get into silo. So what I do intentionally is I would read certain things. I would follow pages that are normally, some people might say controversial, so that I can have different perspective. I might join groups. You know, Facebook has got different groups. I would join certain communities that I might normally not agree with so that I can understand how different perspective and why do people think that way? What are their worldviews? I might sometimes also befriend people that might have different views from me. And in that way, then we sometimes when they see my posts, for example, they will engage me with a conversation. And I think through that engagement, I also learn more about people who are different from me. And as I explain and as I relate to other people, actually sometimes it reinforces why I believe what I believe. And I think that is very important. And that's what I encourage my teenagers to do, that they first need to be have a conviction of what is right and wrong, so that when they are online, which they are online a lot, then they are able to then articulate it in a way. The Bible says we should always be prepared to give reasons for our hope, right? With gentleness and respect, to be able to articulate it in a way that still let them have different perspective, but they know where they stand and not be, you know, pushed in different directions.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I think it's also very important for us as Christians, given that our call is a ministry to reconciliation to God, not to our position, not to our sense of what is right and wrong, it's to God. So God is the arbiter and He is the standard. And we need to understand that we don't have the whole truth all the time, but we should be ready, as you say, to share the truth gently and with reverence and with respect, but to also be very open that other people may have slivers of truth that could enrich us, could deepen our current perspectives and insights and positions.
That's right. I think when we are open to engage them in that way, I think it opens doors to build relationships with people that are different from us that we may not be able to even get to meet in church or get to meet at our workplace, but because we are open to having different conversations. I think we are also in this cultural moment where people want to have dialogue. They don't want a monologue. They don't want, but they want to have a safe space for conversations. Yeah. And if we can present ourselves as a safe space, right, for me to like just talk about things that are close to your heart, that it doesn't matter if we disagree, but we lay out all our different perspectives. And so when sometimes people see that, oh, how come this person comment this thing on your wall, and why don't you just hide the comment, or why don't you just block that person? But for me, I don't do that, because even if people disagree with me, and sometimes my limit, my own boundary is that if you disagree, we disagree respectfully. Don't call names, don't call my Facebook friends names, and I will manage my wall in a way that is really a safe space. You disagree, but don't call people names. Don't be rude, okay? I want to protect my friends. And usually when I say that, people will say, oh, I'm sorry. Actually, people can be civil even if we disagree. And so for us to be able to articulate our arguments or our perspective with gentleness and respect, I really believe that it's a skill that all of us as ambassadors for Christ really need to have.
Thanks for highlighting that. I think that's a very important point, because besides just producing content, we can also produce a certain kind of civility, a certain kind of standard we expect online, in the online space. And, you know, that's true. I mean, God calls us to treat even strangers with, you know, reverence. And I think to embody and to be able to witness to the fact that we have a God of love, we have to learn to interact lovingly online and encourage others who are interacting with us to do the same. I think it's good to hold up some standards and say, hey, please don't do this. You know, that's my friend. That's great. Yeah. So, you know, as we wrap up this conversation, I thought a lot of parents and slightly older leaders, you know, sometimes feel, wow, the online space is always evolving. You know, first there's email, there's internet, then there's Instagram, then there's Telegram, then I don't know what other gram, and then now there's Kilogram, and then now there's TikTok. You know, what else is going to come next? And it's quite frightful sometimes.
Yeah. So my daughters, I have two daughters, they are 18 and 15. For both of them, we didn't let them have their own social media accounts when they were in primary school, but they did post. They did post on Facebook, but they used my account. And that's how, that's my way of co-creating content with them. If they have something to share, or sometimes I find that, hey, what you said was very cute. Do you want to share? And then they would craft it, they would compose it. So it's also composition skills that I'm teaching them, right? They compose something, then we will discuss, oh, maybe this word is not so appropriate, or maybe this picture is not so good. You see, you have shown some personal details. So it's through the co-creating, you know, conversations on what is appropriate, what's not appropriate, over the years in their primary school, that is becomes opportunity for discipleship. To me, it's really discipleship in terms of preparing them to be independent in the online space. When they turn 13, because 13 is the minimum age requirement for almost all social media platforms. So when they turn 13, she got her own Instagram and so on. And then we would have a contract. You know, my family has got we have contract or agreements, okay, where we will talk through, you know, these are things that we as a family agree with. It could be, for example, when you start to use Instagram, it doesn't matter how many accounts we have, we will all be connecting with one another there, just as we are connecting with one another in the physical. Mm. In the online space, we don't hide from one another. We want to continue to connect.
That is excellent.
Yeah. So it's bringing the physical relationship and complementing it in the online world, rather than, oh, it's my own private space, you know, you don't come here, I don't want to friend you. That was the understanding and the agreement, kind of like going into that field. So setting that foundation is my family habit or culture. And so it becomes a transparent, and that, I think, ease off in terms of like this mistrust on both ends.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if parents don't trust our children, we kind of like always nag about the question, always suspicious of what they're doing online. But actually, when there's a transparent atmosphere, we don't have to talk so much, we don't have to nag so much. But because we can actually use that as a space, not to spy on them, but to encourage them and actually be that influencer. You know, our children are following different influencers, right? What if we ourselves are the influencer that they want to follow? What if we figure out what are the value add that we can give to our children or young people around us? Perhaps the value add could be our different experiences, our life journeys. I think as young people, they're always looking for, wow, you know, they like authenticity, real stories. And if we can share whatever we can, that itself becomes a tool for discipleship. And so for my children, they motivate me to be the influencer that they want to follow. I constantly ask myself, what is it that would make me different from all the other influencers that they're following? I may not be a very fit instructor, or I may not be able to draw very well, right? But if I can give them some wisdom that they can't find somewhere else, if I can give them encouragement, right, in a way that none other of my competitors. So that's my competitive advantage, right? So we need to figure out what is our competitive advantage. And actually, I have competitive advantage. I have, in addition to relating to them online, my competitive advantage as a parent, I have got physical proximity.
Yes,
I can make use of physical proximity to give them an experience that is different from all the other influences or competition of their
mindshare. Absolutely. You can sit down with them. You can give them a hug.
Yeah.
You can serve them to you. Nobody else can
correct.
Do that. Yeah.
Yeah, you use that advantage and then compliment it online. Sometimes I will also use, you know, compliment them online. I tag them and sometimes they will tag me. I think our online lives is a reflection of our physical relationship as well. If we are open to encouraging one another online, actually it goes both ways. So that's my journey in terms of how I guide my children. And even as they go into online space, I mentioned earlier, it's really building the conviction. And so we had a lot of conversations about worldview. Sometimes they would, you know, when she was maybe 11, 12, 13, 14, that preteens to teens age, they had a lot of questions about views of the world, you know, about relationships. Yeah. And I had to intentionally make sure that the home is a safe space for them to ask anything. And that takes work as well. So that work is concurrently with building their readiness to be online. Mm. Yeah. So when these both tracks are going concurrently, then when they move online, they will have that conviction and say, yes, actually, God has given me technology. And as a young person, right, there are certain things that I can do also to encourage my friends. So during school holidays, for example, in their lower secondary years, I would say, you know, now you have got social media already, right? So during school holidays, my challenge to you is, can you create an encouraging or inspirational post a day? So that it also becomes a habit that, oh, I need to think about how I can encourage people. So sometimes they will take a picture, add a verse, or sometimes it could be they draw something, simple stuff to kind of like build that habit to say that we can be intentional. And it's not just, you know, another K-pop or another, you know, whatever, but or another food picture. It's not that they are wrong, but we can use it so much more effective if we are intentional about it for God.
Mm. Thank you so much for your sharing, Carol. I think you are right with that word intentional. God created us to be beings of purpose. And it links back to the beginning of our conversation when you talk about the five big questions. And one of the questions is, what am I here for? What's the meaning of my life? And we have meaning in life as Christians, as God's children, to enjoy God's wonderful world, but also to steward it. And one of the wonderful things that somehow has happened in the 20th century is the rise of technology. There's stuff on there for us to enjoy, but there's plenty of stuff on there for us to steward as we consume, as we engage, and as we produce. So this has been a great conversation, Carol. We thank you so much for sharing with us. Before I let you go, though, what has perhaps, both as a parent and as what you're doing right now with Generations of Virtue personally, what has been some really encouraging moments for you? Just very briefly.
I think what encouraged me most is when I see young people being intentional in what they post. So when I'm very encouraged when I see my children produce content that it's just encouraging. They don't need me to nag. They just see it as an opportunity, and then they would produce something that can allow other people to easily understand. How do I put it? It's like a cultural translation. Mm. And it's not something that an external force need to tell them to do, but because of that conviction, that sense of empathy, which is all part of values and character inculcation, when it intersects with that ability to use technology well, then actually it gets amplified. Whatever good intention that they have, it gets amplified. And so when I see young people who do that, whether is it through their photography, through video, through a composition, a pose, you know, or infographic, so many different kinds of things are available now. So when I see young people do that, I feel very encouraged.
Thank you so much, Carol, for saying that. And I think it's a great reminder for all of us that as we live right now in a world where the internet and online is a real space, we will understand that there will be rewards when we live responsibly in that space too, just as there are rewards when we live responsibly in the material space. And folks, if you are listening in, you know, as Christians, our citizenship is with God in His kingdom, and everything that we have and can access and can use conveys the values that we have as citizens of God's kingdom. We believe that we are made in God's image, we are creative, and we have been given the call of stewardship and the mission of reconciliation. With those things in mind, go ahead and consume, but watch what you eat so that it's a good diet. Go ahead and create, watch what you put out so that it is either kind or necessary or true. Go ahead and check your facts. Go ahead and be very aware as you're communicating for your own safety. Watch out for younger people who might be experiencing grooming or bullying online. Teach people how to, and teach, train yourself how to suss out the true news from the fake news. Remember, people have a motive for what they put out there. Don't have to move around in fear or suspicion, but just be aware. And finally, as you communicate and critique, remember the Holy Spirit is there to guide you. God bless. Thank you for listening into this episode.
Thank you for listening in. We hope you've been encouraged with some new thoughts on faith and life integration. You can find us on the Cathedral app, iTunes, Spotify, or at cathedral.org.sg/podcast. Be sure to join us again.